Blog Talk Radio.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious sh.
What's up, everybody? It's John from the Punch Drunk Critics. Welcome. Happy Halloween, first of all. Happy Halloween to everybody. Happy Halloween. It's a huge, huge event for us here. Today, we had RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan. Travis and I are both huge hip-hop fans, huge fans of Wu-Tang. So it's really a huge moment for our site to be able to talk to RZA on really what I would see as the pinnacle of the reason they got in the business in the first place. I mean, we'll talk about it more when Travis gets on air, but when the Wu-Tang Clan was founded, if you didn't guess from the name, the reason the group got together mainly, other than, you know, their musical talent, was their love for 70s-era kung fu movies, you know, Bruce Lee, Enter the Dragon, everything like that, and all the way into the more, I don't know if chop-socky is an endearing term or not, but, you know, those types of movies in the 70s, they all dug them, and that's what got them together.
I use it all the time. I use chop-socky all the time. I don't look at it as a derogatory term or anything like that. I think it's just a descriptive term for that sort of Shaw Brothers style of kung fu movie that we all really like, and obviously the RZA is a fan of it, and obviously so is Quentin Tarantino, who gave us a lot of that in Kill Bill and stuff like that. So
we've seen it with Tarantino, but I don't think. Let me get your take. I don't think anybody is going to bring it as faithfully as RZA is going to, because I mean, yeah, Tarantino likes it, but he's not going to be able to take himself out of it with the. It's really going to match, I think, on screen what we expect from the awesome kung fu movies of the past with RZA directing. Mm-hmm. I was just telling you that one of the main reasons Wu-Tang formed was through their mutual love for movies of this type of era. So for him to be making this movie is almost like a pinnacle or a finishing of the circle in some way for getting in the business in the first place.
I missed some of that. Sorry. It was my fault. Something else happened that distracted me. So I lost you about halfway through there. But
I'm just saying, I'm thinking he's going to bring it more faithfully than a Tarantino would if he was directing it. I don't know
about that.
You think so?
I mean, I don't know. I think they both have some of the same sensibilities as directors. And just because he's a founder of the Wu-Tang Clan doesn't mean he has any more knowledge or anything like that of the genre than a guy like Tarantino does. I think Tarantino was pretty faithful to the genre in the Kill Bill movies. Well, Kill Bill 1 anyway. Although filtered through his own, you know, sort of, eccentric style, but his own unique style, at least. And I imagine RZA will do the same thing.
Right.
I guess the thing is, with Tarantino, we sort of have an idea of his sort of movies. By the time we'd seen Kill Bill, we kind of knew who he was already.
Right.
Knew he's this guy who likes to pay homage to the movies that he loved growing up, and that's exactly what Kill Bill turned out to be. It was one great big homage, one big wet kiss to the kung fu genre is what it was.
Yeah.
But we don't know what the RZA is as a director yet. I don't know. This will be a good opening taste to see that. And it's the kind of movie you'd want to see from a guy like him. But like I said, we don't know what he'll actually bring to the table in this film yet. So
I hear you on that. I think obviously neither one of us has seen it yet. But right. I, from what we've seen on screen, what I know of what we've seen in kung fu movies lately, American kung fu movies at least, a Tarantino, you know, he captures a lot of it, but like you said, his own eccentricities are in there. I think just my impression of RZA is of a true fan of the genre, in which case
Absolutely.
He would bring it with almost like homage isn't really right, the right word, but you know, he would bring it as faithfully as possible because that's what he wants to see. The same way, if I made a Star Wars movie, you know, I would make probably what a lot of fanboys would want to see, and many other people wouldn't like it, but you know, you'd get all the veins of what made it popular for people directly back in the day without any extras on top.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean, we'll find out if that's what actually ends up being the case when the Man of Iron Fist comes out this week. And you could very well be right, but I think that no matter what, whenever you're trying to honor something or sort of revisit something that you love, you always end up putting your own spin on it. Kind of just always do. And I still expect this to be about as faithful of a sort of martial arts epic as we would expect it to be. But we'll see. All I think I know is RZA has been working on this thing for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I used to follow, I still do, but back in the day, maybe a decade ago, I followed hip hop about as closely as I follow movies, even writing about them on the occasion. And I remember when RZA first started talking about this movie in interviews, and that was about 2004, 2005 or so is when he first started talking about them. And I was excited about it then, but you didn't really hear much. Like, RZA had a lot of sort of movie projects going on at the time. He had the Bobby Digital movie that a lot of people were talking about, and you know, he was doing soundtracks and things like that and all this sort of thing. And the Man with Iron Fist sort of, it kind of vanished for a while. You heard about it every now and then. And then around 2010, it really started to pick up again. And that was when, you know, Eli Roth sort of entered the picture. And Eli Roth, the guy who did both Hostel movies and appeared in Inglourious Basterds, and he co-wrote the script for The Man with the Iron Fist. And, you know, and Russell Crowe came aboard, and, you know, RZA had worked with him on The Next 3 Days and American Gangster. And that was when the pieces really started to come together, and RZA was really happy to talk about the movie from that point on, which I thought was really cool. And he ends up talking about the movie. You can sense his enthusiasm, I think, in the interview. He's really excited to see what people think of the film.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, you know, and going back to what you said earlier about, you know, anybody's going to bring their own flavor to something they love when they put it on screen. And that's something that's the grab bag for stuff like this is, you know, let's be honest, a lot of the kung fu movies that we remember fondly because we watched them as children. The same reason that, you know, we liked a lot of stuff that wasn't maybe that good to an adult eye or to a seasoned eye, let's say. And, you know, as long as you don't go back and study those movies, if you just bring what you think is best from them, I think it's good. Because, I mean, have you watched any of the, you know, Saturday morning kung fu cinema movies recently? Like 36 Chambers or anything like that?
Off and on, I'll catch them. I still have a few here at the house, but yeah, on occasion I still watch them, and they're fun.
Yeah,
they're silly. They're more silly than anything else, I think. At least when you look at them now, they're kind of silly. I took them really seriously when I was young.
I thought I was the 36 Chamber Shaolin. And I you know, Ten Fingers of Death. All those movies were awesome, and I think if RZA is able to bring what was the heart, the core of what made those movies great, and then mix it in with, like a modern day kung fu, like Ip Man, or anything Donnie Yen does, pretty much, that has more like a grounded feel, but he still puts the, like, you know, you saw in the trailer Bautista turning to gold, and all the over the top stuff. And if he's able to find a good balance there, I think this is gonna be something that a lot of people really, really dig. And I didn't get a chance to listen to the whole thing, beginning to end, so I might have missed this question, but, I really wonder how RZA feels about being able to use kung fu lines from his own movies in his songs. If you listen to the soundtrack, they, you know, Wu-Tang back, they, even their old songs would open with a line from just a random kung fu movie. And now he's got the soundtrack for this, and he's getting lines from his own movie in there. That had to be cool for him to do.
Right. Well, let's go ahead and listen to the interview with the RZA, because I know people are dying to hear what the Wu-Tang Clan founder and master has to say about this film that a lot of people are really anticipating.
All right, let's roll with it.
Well, big fan, man. This guy said it right up front.
looking forward to talking to you for a long time. I've been waiting for this movie a long time, too. I know you've been working on it for a while.
I know, I've been on it for a while. This is a long birth and labor period.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got delivery right around the corner.
Yeah, because you've been talking about it for, God, I think I first heard about it before 2010, or is like when you were starting talking about it.
Yeah, I was talking about this film since the screenplay was, my first version was written in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I told Eli about it 2006. I had some people interested in it in that year.
Mm-hmm.
We was going to do it with a small budget because we thought we could. But then he came back to me in 2007 and was like, yo, you know, you close the deal, I would love to do the movie with you. Mm-hmm. And I agreed. And But we had to fix it up, of course. I had about 90 pages and we had to really expand upon it. He read it, he gave it to some producers. They thought it was good, but it wasn't. You know, he couldn't go to the studio with it, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And so he came and sat down. We spent the whole year polishing it up and getting it proper. We went from 90 pages to 130 pages. And then around 2010, we after the process we went through, plus he was working on Glorious Bastards and I was doing. But 2010, we went in to the studio with a fixed formatted idea.
Mm.
And some good producers behind our back, and we stepped in, and they agreed, and they greenlit it. And from then it took us about 6 months to get started, about 6 months of preparation. I started filming early 2011. That's when I started filming, January 2011.
Yeah.
I filmed up until March. It took about 10 weeks. Came home, took a little break, because I was actually gone from home for 150 days in China. I got home and kind of had to clean my head up for about, you know, it took about 3 weeks off clearing my head. And by April, we went to post. And post is usually 20 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I did my 15 weeks in post. I had my director's cut. After my director's cut, I was kind of burnt a little bit.
Yeah.
And I took a break and went and did G.I. Joe, which was cool for me to get out of it and, you know, get back into acting and also freshen my mind back up. Came back to editing.
Crazy schedule.
Yeah. Finished the edit to a degree, to where my job was done. But this job was like my child, my baby. The producers was cool enough not to take it out of my hands.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great relationship, me and the producers, Mark Abraham, Eric Newman, Eli Roth. We had a great relationship, so they left it in my hands. And even when, if I stopped, everything stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and did Californication.
Yeah.
In the middle of this process as well. And when I did Californication, I had to do that, because after I edited the film down, I saw it and I watched it. I was like, man, this character is not me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the actual fact.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't want people, this is my biggest screen time, I think. You know, maybe American Gangster had some good screen time in that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is more than that, actually. So, and this is probably the one that may identify me.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be pigeonholed like that.
Right.
So let me go do another character. Just show that, no, I'm acting like this guy. I'm not this guy.
Right.
And so I went and did Californication, and people saw me be this fucking guy.
Yeah.
He's not me either. But I put the gold teeth in my mouth and did Samurai Apocalypse and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I finished that, I felt relieved. Cause that was like a 10-week process to shoot those episodes. More than 12-week. It was a 12-week schedule. And then I got back to editing, finished the movie to the polished level,
mm-hmm.
and then they told me to score it. And that took another 8 months. So from filming, scoring, composing, that's still another 2-year process. We come out November 2nd.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a process, man.
Yeah, sounds like it, man. I don't know how you made it. Hold up between filmmaking and stopping to act as well, but your acting's really taken off. So I mean,
yeah,
props to you, man.
Thanks, y'all.
It's been going really good. Talk to me about your influences. Like, what's the main, like, I know you love a lot of kung fu movies, I do too, but what's the one kung fu film that you think best influenced this film for you?
One that best influenced this film? Man. It won't be one, but one of my favorite films of all time will be, you know, Five Deadly Venoms is just a film where you got multiple styles, you know what I mean? You got a great plot.
Yeah.
That was a great, that's just a good movie even without Kung Fu.
Yeah, it is.
So I could say that, I could say that's one of my most influential films because it's good without the Kung Fu.
Right.
And this movie is good without the Kung Fu. The Kung Fu is dope in this movie, though. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah.
I got enough.
Is it everything you wanted to put in it? Everything?
Not everything. Mm-hmm. We got some stuff that ain't even in it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Save that for the sequel, huh?
Yeah, or I think the DVD got 15 more minutes.
Okay. Nice.
Even, like, I actually watched some of the DVD yesterday because, you know, we're preparing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, shit, I forgot we killed that nigga that way. And they did that. Oh, yeah, it's like, oh, shit, they're going to go crazy with that. But that's the privacy of your own home.
Right.
You know, because it's a little gory.
Red Band Trail was a little gory.
Bonk, bonk. But,
what's your favorite style? Like, Tiger style, Crane, what's your favorite style?
My favorite style of my Kung Fu?
Yeah.
Yeah, it will be Tiger style. Well, Tiger Crane is... you know, the same. It's really Hung Guard, Five Pattern Fist, which is Tiger, Crane, Leopard, Snake. Tiger, Crane, Leopard, Snake. Tiger, Crane, Leopard, Snake.
I can remember it too.
Oh, I got it. Dragon.
There you go. There you go.
Those are the main five patterns for external Kung Fu. There are 12 animals in internal Kung Fu.
Talk about some of your... directing influences, because you had an opportunity to work with some great directors already.
Yeah.
How did they affect you as for your first time out?
I think all the directors that I worked with as an actor in different capacities, all just, you know, I just picked up a little bit from everybody, man. I pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? When I go to school, I pay attention.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was in school. You know, Hollywood is a new world for me, you know, coming from hip-hop. And hip-hop got a bad stigma in Hollywood in the sense that some of the artists who have made it into the world of Hollywood has brought with them some of their hip-hop luggage and hip-hop personalities that these people don't have to tolerate, put up with, and don't want to, in a sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Regardless of how much money you're worth. It ain't your money is not impressive to them at all.
Right.
And all, nor the money they can make off you.
Right.
This is a very artist, you know, calculated business making films.
Mm.
And one person can really make, it's like a house of cards. And one card can really bring the whole house down. So it's important that every card stays in its position.
Mm-hmm.
So me being around such great people, you know, I was just able to do the knowledge and watch what they do. Now, of course, fortunately, I'm blessed and I was fortunate to meet Quentin Tarantino, and we have like minds, and he loves Wu-Tang. I love his movies, you know what I mean? But I was able to become his student, you know what I mean? And I always tell him I'm not shy to say that. And I won't be shy until he says stop saying it. Then I'll stop.
Right.
But I'm not shy of that, you know what I mean? I'm not shy what I learned from Jim Jarmusch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not shy what I learned from John Woo during the lunches that we had in the late 90s. You know what I mean? I'm not shy to say when I was on the set of American Gangster, you know, to me, one of the smartest directors in the world is Ridley Scott, in all reality. I'm saying, even though Quentin is my mentor, Ridley has a multi-vision about him that a lot of people's minds just don't have that in their mind.
Right.
You know, I play chess, so I understand how you got to think ahead and ahead and ahead and ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually see it, you know what I mean? He does. And when I saw that he did that, I saw that it was possible. And when I saw that was possible, I tried to do it.
Right.
You know, my film, I did pull it off a few times on certain things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, working with Quentin, I seen him hold the camera and use the camera, you know, when he was doing his film. You know, he got a DP. He's a man that will get that camera himself.
Right.
On my film, you know, I manned the camera, you know, we had 3 to 6 cameras. But on some shots, hold on. All right, set me up right there. I want to get this angle that nobody ain't seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the DP, I know we got that. But get me right here. Let me fish on this angle. And the stuff that I would fish on, because I wanted to, because fishing means while the scene is going on, I'm picking up other ambiences of the scene that when I edit later, in case I need to go to somewhere else, I got somewhere to go.
Right.
You know what I mean? I got a pan over. I got to focus from the bottle to the face. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learned a lot from the multiple directors I worked with. That was the question. But I got a lot from those brothers, man.
Do you bring any of the same, I guess, mentality or approach that you bring to hip-hop, that you bring to making movies?
Yeah, definitely. That's what makes me, I think, unique.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be what's going to make this film stand out this quarter. You know, to me, Iron Fist and Django will be the two coolest R-rated films.
They're like cousins. If you just look at them aesthetically, they look like they're made, almost like the same guy, or like, just like I said, like cousins.
Definitely from the same school, you know what I mean? And they're both totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different in the sense of what kind of action we're doing, the theme of what's happening. They have their similarities, but what I'm saying is that the hip-hop part of me, just like Quinn's, his musicality, you know, his music, his movies always got some good music.
Yep.
And the hip-hop part of me is able to make something that the other great directors who are great but don't have that other quality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to, I think, resonate in the film. And it may resonate to some in a great way, and some maybe a different way, you know what I mean? Like, well, no, it's a hip-hop. You know what I mean? But no, if you went to movies, this film is almost watchable without sound because of how the cinematography is.
Right.
But with the sound design, right? Mm-hmm. Think of this. When we did the sound design, we had a 96-channel mix board. Now, I got a 64-channel mix board in my house.
Right.
So I'm used to these channels.
Right.
And we were sitting there moving the sound effects. Hooking it up, man, in a way that it's going to be impressive. I saw the film in a good theater. Hope people see this in a good sounding theater.
Yeah,
because you'll really appreciate the sound design that we also put into this film. The score, you know, we combine hip hop with soul music with orchestra music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? A little bit of RZA weirdness, all right? And you're going to have a lot of fun listening to the movie. Even if you just close your eyes and listen to the movie, it has a vibe.
Yeah.
I made sure, man. I'm a guy that works on different senses and different things, you know, as a musician anyway,
mm-hmm.
and as a film buff who always go to movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I made sure that I thought of a lot of things that make movies work.
Yeah.
And I put them in here, man. So if you don't like one thing for 3 minutes, say 3 minutes, you wasn't into that guy.
Right.
No, I go to God. I got somebody for you, kid. I got, you know, remember Wu-Tang, you might, you know, if you don't like Raekwon, you like meth.
Everybody,
you got somebody for you.
A couple guys I want to ask you about in particular. I'm a bit of a wrestling fan.
Okay.
So what was it like working with Dave Bautista?
Cool. That was cool, dude. You know, when I first got Dave Bautista to come on board, I invited him over somewhere. It was in L.A. somewhere. And I invited him over to, Method Man was shooting some kind of video thing,
mm-hmm.
and he came over. And he didn't know I wanted to meet him, and he's a Wu-Tang fan.
Mm-hmm.
After he had the coolest fucking Wu-Tang shirt on, I mean, the coolest one, like the one, like, I don't know who the fuck made it, but it was cool.
Yeah.
But he came through, and I started sizing him up. You know, like I said, take pictures of me and him standing back to back,
mm-hmm.
side to side, front to front like this. And he didn't exactly, he's like, this motherfucker sizing me up. I'm about to break the wrist up. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
But I told him, after, you know, about 20 minutes of that shit, I was like, yo, I'm doing this film, and I'd like you to be my character, Brass Body.
Mm.
And he said, well, he always felt like he loved the Toad from Five Venoms.
Oh.
And he always wanted to be the Toad. And I was like, well.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In this film, you basically can say you are the Toad. Cause you're the one that's invulnerable.
Yeah.
And then one of the reasons why I chose him, because we had some people to choose from, but mm-hmm. I saw him on the internet doing training with this guy named Maurice Crump.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing the body. Have you seen this on the internet with him?
No, but I know the guy you're talking about.
Yeah, so, and Dave was fast with that shit. Mm-hmm. So I just knew that in a scenario like this, he's going to deliver.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he really locks in this film, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he kills this film. This film, I got a feeling that Dave is going to be have a nice career in Hollywood.
He's got some stuff coming up. He's got the Vin Diesel movie coming up too. So
yeah.
He's got some stuff.
And the, even yeah, I let those guys watch a clip of him.
Oh, nice.
Before you know, before he went for the audition, I allowed them to see what this man could do, which is something I think. You know, one thing I was gonna share with you, bro, that I'm the kind of director that really appreciates the talent of people that comes to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
And while they did, you know, they did 110% for me.
Right.
And I had their back 110%. Usually, when you make a film, because I worked on films as an actor,
mm-hmm.
you don't see the finished product until the premiere.
Right.
Being that my actors have sacrificed so much for me, that at certain times when they needed to, like, prove to somebody else what they was doing,
mm-hmm.
I would say, you could come in the editing room. I got a scene that you could show somebody, and they'll know that, first of all, that this film is dope and that you are fucking killing it.
Right.
Nobody let me down.
Right.
Nobody in this film let me down. Rick Yoon
mm-hmm.
playing the hero. The studio was against it in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because he's a villain guy.
Yeah.
So usually people get, no. But him playing a different side of the law,
mm-hmm.
he delivered when you see this guy.
Right.
Russell Crowe in a role, you never seen him like this. He's a serious, you've never seen him like this.
I was going to ask, did you watch like 3:10 to Yuma or Quick and the Dead?
Of course. And even in those movies, he's not like this.
Right.
I got a Russell Crowe on the screen. His character study for the part was ODB.
That's pretty awesome.
Exactly.
That's pretty awesome.
That was the character study for the part. So you want to see him doing some shit you never, you know, seen Russell Crowe do.
If I need another reason to go see the movie, that's it right there. And I was going to go see it anyway. So I think our time is about up. So
and I just want to say one thing about Lucy Liu.
Please do.
For the females, understand that what Lucy Liu protected us for, protected her interest in this film, is was to protect the imagery of women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I already feel that way. I mean, I love women, and I think women do get a short end of the stick, actually, mm-hmm. in our world. And I'm an advocate of women's right and of them. All men are created equal.
Mm-hmm.
That means white man, black man, red man, yellow man, brown man, woman.
Right.
All right? Don't
Absolutely.
Forget that. Anyway, but she really protects that interest in the film and shit. And I think the ladies who come to this movie is going to be so surprised how much they're going to enjoy it. Because it seemed like a guy flick.
Yeah.
But it's a man's world, right? But
right.
It won't be nothing without a woman or a girl. And I made sure of that.
Ever think about doing maybe a female-led action movie?
I do have one in the back of my head.
Mm.
It's
All right, well, if you do that, man, I want to be the person to know about it. All right, and that was the interview with the RZA, talking about his new film, The Man with the Iron Fists. I really love everything he said there in those last couple of minutes where he got to talk about the cast a little bit. And he seemed like he really wanted to put the emphasis on them and let people know the kind of work that these people were doing. Obviously, he talked about Dave Bautista, the ex-WWE star, how well he fit into the role of the guy named Brass Body, Russell Crowe, and I was kind of blown away by him saying that Old Dirty Bastard was the inspiration for the role that role of Jackknife that Russell Crowe is playing, and that alone is worth the price of admission. And of course Lucy Liu as well, who has become sort of a veteran of these sorts of movies. She's been out of the spotlight for a while. I know she's back in it now with Elementary on CBS, but she's been sort of forgotten a little bit, I think. You know, you think about those movies she did, Charlie's Angels, and of course both Kill Bill movies. She's probably one of the better action heroines in the business right now, and it's good to see her getting another chance to show off what she's got.
But anyway, The Man with the Iron Fists opens this Friday. So I suggest everybody go and check that out. We'll be seeing it hopefully tomorrow night. And I will have a review up on punchdrunkcritics.com, and I'll have one on examiner.com as well. So you won't be able to miss it no matter how hard you try. But that's it. We have no show this Sunday. John and I will be at the Virginia Film Festival. So we'll be back next weekend with more reviews. I hope you enjoyed this interview. We'll be having plenty more coming up. Thanks again for listening. Bye.
We came, we saw, we kicked his ass.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
I'm not great at farewell, so that'll do, pig.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.